You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse today. We're continuing our bubble preview for every position group. If you didn't catch it, Adam started us off yesterday talking about the centers, Turbonis, Goga, all you need to know about what to look for those guys down in the bubble. Today, we're conquering the forwards. I'll do the guards on Monday. Adam is on vacation, so Monday, Tuesday will be just me next week, and then he'll be back for our weekly show Wednesday where we preview scrimmages, because a week from today of the podcast will be a recap of the scrimmage against the Blazers, the Pacers' first game since March 10th. It's going to be very awesome. But in the meantime, we're talking forward. So today's show will be broken up into three groups. The first group is the bench guys. So by bench, I mean like literally sitting on the bench all the time. Guys, Alize Johnson, TJ Leaf, and Brian Bowen, what to watch for those guys in the bubble. Second segment, I'll do the guys in the back of the rotation, or I guess the solid rotation guys, Jakar, and then McDermott and Justin Holiday. And the third section, all about TJ Warren, because, you know, he's been awesome this year. He deserves his own segment. I guess Sabonis is a forward, but it made more sense to do him in the center show. So let's start with the group that there's kind of less to keep an eye on down in the bubble, and that is Alize Johnson, TJ Leaf, and Brian Bowen. Starting with, but we'll go least minutes to most minutes this season. So we'll start with Brian Bowen. I know it seems counterintuitive to go least to most. But Bowen, you know, half his minutes come in one start this year. We haven't seen much of him in the pros at all. Has not had any sort of scoring ability in the pros. 2-for-9 shooting. Missed both his threes. But he looked okay on the glass. Had some nice defense against the Bulls. There's sort of a player in there. I'm sure he has some sort of NBA future. But in the bubble, right, all I care about with Bowen and all I'm going to be watching for is what's his role in the rotation. Like he'll probably only play in a scrimmage if he does play. I highly doubt he'll play in the seeding games just because they matter for the Pacers. And so what's he going to do in the scrimmages? And if he does play, you know, what does he show? What useful transferable skills does he bring forward? Because I'm actually curious. So he's a rookie, so is Goga. Like, for a lot of rookies, they're usually right now is their second season. They're revving up for their first full offseason in the NBA. So they've had 4 months in the middle of their rookie season that other centers have not had, or other rookies have not had in their career. So Bowen, you know, I don't know what's he going to look like? Is he going to come out there a little more polished, look a little better? He's had a lot of time with the Mad Ants because he ran out of his 2A days, right? Is he going to be ready to rock when he gets there? And if he shows some skills, maybe they bring him back on a minimum deal or, you know, try to sign him back to the Mannets or something. But mainly, just does he play? What skills does he show? Stuff like that. I actually don't know who's played less minutes between Alize and TJ Leaf this year. I can't believe this thing. I have to check. Okay, Alize has played much less. That's right. Leaf played a ton of minutes early in the season. Alize Johnson. Stuff to watch with him. Same as Bowen and Leaf, honestly, is does he play is a big question for these guys at all. I mean, again, in the scrimmages, I'm sure we'll get a glimpse of everybody at some point. But Alize, you know, he actually did hit the rotation, remember, for that brief stretch in November when the entire team was hurt. Jakar, Sabonis, Turner for a little bit. They started Goga and Jakar one game. That's one of the games Alize played in. So he's been in the rotation before. That was after Leaf had been yanked out of it. And I think that was, since that's the most recent instance of the Pacers needing to go that deep in the bench, right? In theory, there's a chance that if there's a bunch of injuries again or they're being super cautious with injuries, that Alize would get to play over Leaf. And same thing, what is he going to show? He's a restricted free agent after these 8 games. He's not only he's probably fighting for his NBA life, if we're being honest, because, I mean, I don't know, what team in the NBA is just going to scoop up Alize Johnson this summer because they're really into him? I mean, he's got a G League future, a Europe future. He's a good basketball player. But, you know, if he wants to stick in the NBA, I guess he could take the minimum from the Pacers next year if they're willing to offer it. And he's got some unique skills for his size, but he's really got to show something on the court maybe in these games to really cement it. You know, like I think in that stretch of 3 games he played in, he actually played okay. at times, you know, I still think he's really rusty is the wrong word, raw in a lot of areas of the game, but his motor on the glass is ridiculous, and if he could just polish up some offensive skills, he'd be a decently useful player. So again, if he can be really tidy in these scrimmages, that's kind of important and increases his chances of A, being in the NBA, but B, just being re-signed in general next year in this contract year. TJ Leaf, I mean, I don't really know what to watch for with Leaf anymore. His shooting form looks a little different in the videos we've seen of him. I have does he play typed out. I have something typed out for every player, sometimes two things. For Leaf here, does he play is first, obviously. And again, scrimmages, we'll see him for sure. Early in the season, he was in the rotation, but you know, since then, basically only garbage time. I don't think he's gotten a rotation minute in a normal game since early November. Fallen out of the graces of the coaching staff. So Leaf, I think, has... Here's something I was talking... Josh Padmore, if you're listening, what's up? For those of you that don't know Josh, I was talking to him about TJ Leaf on Twitter. He's talks about basketball a lot on Twitter. And I was saying that I think TJ Leaf, a problem for him in his career is that he's better at center than as a four. And given the Pacers roster construction, there's just no way to get him center minutes, right? Goga's better than him right now. And, of course, Turner and Sabonis are better. So there's just no way to get him center minutes. They have three better centers who are all 25 and under. There's just no way to play him. And he, you know, he had a very few attempts, but he drilled some threes in college. And he drilled his threes his rookie year. So there was some fake, like, stretch four potential there. But I think it was just low attempts both of those years. And in reality, his three-point shot has never materialized. Changed his form twice. Adding muscle didn't help him. So he's just kind of a center who's stuck on the perimeter every time he plays. And, you know, like, he had that crazy rebound game against the Bulls this year. That they literally won that game because of him. Stuff like that makes me believe in his center abilities more than his power forward ability. So if they can get him any center minutes, that's what I'll watch for with Leaf. But I mostly think we're going to be stuck watching him struggle, you know, either ball handling or shooting from the perimeter. But if he shows any slight sort of glimmer of hope, that would be great because they have already picked up his team option for next year. So, you know, great shooting or great work on the glass or something would just be huge for both Leaf and the Pacers because, you know, it's going to be harder to trade him in this summer. Every team is cap strapped, so he might be on the roster no matter what. So anything he shows that is, looks like he could be useful next season is huge. So that's the guys who aren't going to play. I know no one really wanted to listen to me talk about those guys, but we're covering everybody here for the restart position groups. So let's move on to some more interesting guys who are going to get minutes after a short little break. Okay, the next group, guys who have some sizable minutes this season. I guess the fake Mendoza line here is, do they have more minutes than Oladipo this season? So the three guys I just named do not have more minutes than Oladipo. The next three guys do. That's Jakar Sampson, Justin Holiday, and Doug McDermott. Jakar has three more minutes than Depot, which moves him up a tier. Although, if you've kept up with the Pacers all season long, you know that Jakar has been kind of important for this team. He has as many starts as Depot, which is funny too. Anywho, you know, he's been the perfect injury fill-in, kind of at the three, but mostly at the four and five. He's been just a scrappy defender. He makes his shots. He's shooting 67% from two-point range. So even despite being 2-for-13 on all of his threes this season, really good effective field goal percentage, pretty solid true shooting, right? He's been a very fine offensive player just because all he does is dunk. That's fine for a guy who's just being a role player anyway. But he's been useful, and that's not something I anticipated from Jakar Sampson this season. So, but I don't know what to watch for with him, really. He, like Alize, is in a contract year, although his last contract year with the Bulls, he played four games at the end of the year and just stat stuffed, and that's how he got a roster spot this year. He won't have that opportunity this year. However, he is still fighting for a spot in the NBA. I think he's proved he belongs. Personally, I think any team, like in the whole, if you're a tanktastic team, Jakar Sampson's not good enough to swing you to win games, but he's still good and useful to have like around in practice. Nice dude to have a locker room around. And if you're a good team like the Pacers or even an elite team pushing for the finals, having Jakar Sampson as like your last forward is fine. Like he clearly can defend anything at a capable level, even if not great capably. Anywho, he's fighting to stay in the league. So if he plays, you know, I'm sure he's going to be trying to show some stuff. He can't really dribble much, so I don't know what he can do, but I'll just be seeing how he tries to fit in on the floor versus stand out. I know his defense is going to be good. He always will bust his butt out there, but You know, how much does he try to stand out versus fit in? And, you know, he might not play in the standard rotation, but Jakar and up, basically, because the Pacers are, you know, not, they're leaning into health a little bit more so than they were during the season. I need to phrase this more appropriately because I feel like I've been guilty of being one of the people who was like, they don't care about winning. They're all going all for health. That's not true. They obviously want to win. They're a basketball team headed for the postseason who's good. It's just more so than a normal circumstance of regular season, they might stretch out the rotation or reduce minutes for guys. So Jakar might get to play. I think he'll definitely play in the scrimmages, right? He played a ton in the actual preseason. In the games, he might get 5 minutes. I don't know if they're going to stretch it out that thin. We'll see if they sit guys out for the last one. Or I think I saw the Mavs said their first scrimmage isn't actually 48 minutes. It's only 40 minutes long, right? So if they're really weird or, you know, maybe McMillan just sits his starters after a quarter or something, then you'll see a lot of Jakar against the Blazers in that game. So we'll see. But that's what I'm watching for with him. The next two guys have a lot more intrigue and meaning, really, on the season. Justin Holiday, Doug McDermott, for sure going to be in the rotation, for sure going to be a big part of how the rest of the Pacers season goes. So starting with McDermott, I think the joking way to talk about McDermott at first is, are these road games or home games? Because, again, his road-home three-point shooting splits are just ridiculous. I actually should have pulled them up. I thought I was just going to make a one-line joke about this, but it actually is still incredibly alarming how much better he is shooting on the road. This is two seasons in a row, right? So this is not, maybe this isn't a fluke. Anywho, on the road this year, 54.6%, at home, 33.1%. That's ridiculous. But in a more serious note, if you'll recall last year, you know, they didn't use McDermott nearly as well. They didn't have the creators off the bench with Joseph and, I'm totally blanking on last year's Pacers team second unit. Tyreek Evans, thank you. They didn't have the creators to really set him up for all the sets, and they didn't run as much for him. Sabonis wasn't as polished of a passer. They just couldn't use him right. And then come playoff time, after three games, they were like, why are we even playing him? He's just getting torched on defense by these Celtic wings. He's not adding any value on offense because his shooting, they weren't using it at all. Why are we playing him? So in the last game, in the elimination game, Doug McDermott was not in the Pacers rotation, which is crazy. I mean, if your last-ditch effort of we got to maximize our team to try to win a playoff game is don't play Doug McDermott, like that's alarming. This year, with McConnell, with Sabonis actually being able to pass, with whoever the shooting guard is, Aaron Holiday, whatever, they've had creators on the second unit, and at the same time, Nate McMillan's finally leading into using this guy both as a decoy and as a pick-and-roll ball handler with Sabonis sometimes, as a guy flying off Sabonis screens for handoff, stuff like that. They finally are using him right, and lo and behold, he's super helpful. So I'm really watching for him. I mean, obviously his shooting is important in the regular season too, but what does his rotation spot look like in the postseason? How does his shooting help the second unit in the postseason? Because we didn't see any help from him, or any help is the wrong word, but you know, there wasn't really a lot to learn or like about McDermott's postseason last year at all. I mean, only playing three games is the headliner for me. The fact that they said, we are literally better if we do not play you in this game. But, I mean, his postseason track record's pretty bad. Like 2014-15, I believe, was his rookie year. He only got in three games. He only played like 10 minutes. And then he got in for five games with the Russell Westbrook Thunder team, but only played 13 minutes a game in that series too. So his playoff pedigree is not super awesome. He also missed every three he took last year. So really looking to see how McDermott does in the playoffs, both from an accuracy standpoint and from a role standpoint, because I think the second unit's at its best with him and Holiday both just destroying on the wings, and if he can maintain that in the postseason, that'd be huge, especially if he gets minutes. And speaking of Justin Holiday, let's get to him, because, I mean, one of the more crucial players for this team, when I wrote about him, I was just appalled at the end of May. This is a while ago now, but appalled at how much the second unit's net rating swings when he's in and out of the game. I mean, I know he's been awesome this year, both on defense and as a three-point shooter, floor spacer, can dribble a little bit. You know, he's done everything, but I was just amazed at the difference between their net rating when they played with and without Holiday. He's so crucial for the bench. That's something I'll be watching as well. But I have two things written down. The first one is maintain shooting, because, you know, I think he can do it. Our sample size is huge. I mean, it's only one season, but 65 games is a lot. 4.4 attempts per game. I forget his total number. I should know this. It's almost 300 three-point attempts in total this year. That's a sizable sample size to say. You know, he might have improved as a shooter, right? So whatever he did this offseason, whatever the Pacers have done for his shooting, whatever scheme they're doing, is working for him. He's getting good looks, and he's making them for the first time in his career, right? He's never been over in a full season 36% even before. Now he's at 42. That's crazy. Can he maintain that down the stretch when it's important, both in these eight seeding games? Because if him and McDermott are draining their threes, there's legit no way the Pacers can lose more than four games because their second unit will just kill guys. But then in the playoffs as well, if he can maintain that shooting, maintain being an effective player, I mean, he's going to play a ton in the postseason if that's the case, because shooters are important and he can defend at a high level, which in the postseason, the game slowed down a little bit. The sets become all the more important. Having smart defenders who are also good defenders becomes that much more important. So that's one thing I'm watching with him is, can he maintain the play he had for 65 games down the stretch? I think he can. And number two is clutch lineups. Is he going to be a part of them? I should have remembered that. I shouldn't have had to click back to my tab. I only say that because I had that typed in with the thought of Depot. Like, if Depot was playing, I find it extremely hard to believe Justin Holiday would be in the last five unless Depot doesn't look good. But if Depot just sits out still, you know, still kind of up in the air, although it seems like everything from what he's saying and the team is saying, he's leaning towards playing. But if Depot sits out, I mean, I can see a world where Justin Holiday at the four makes the most sense. And there's still a world, even with Depot, where, you know, one of the centers sits out for Justin Holiday in the closing lineup. I was thinking he would play the two and TJ Warren would get bumped up if Depot was out or something like that. But anywho, you know, I think if he's in clutch lineups, the team might be at their best. I mean, he's really good at the four. He struggles with like the Serge Ibaka type fours, but a lot of teams that have smaller fours or quicker fours, he does a good job against. And again, his shooting and defense is huge. So is he in clutch lineups? Is that what McMillan wants to lean on to end games to try to win the Pacers games when they need him? I think that'll be something interesting to watch for with him. But I think this whole group, Jakar, McDermott, Holiday, less so with Jakar, but if they can maintain what they were doing for the 65 games the Pacers have played this season, that'll go a long way, because having your role players be consistent is super important, and in the playoffs that is often not the case. They're the biggest culprits of, you know, the home games and the road game swings in terms of team effectiveness. So if there's no home and road games, if those guys can maintain, that's huge for the Pacers. But one more guy, TJ Warren. And I want to do a whole segment just for him. It'll probably be shorter because I don't have a ton of stuff written down. But, you know, he deserves it. He's been awesome this year. So let's take a break and talk about him. The last forward in the bubble, Mr. Warren himself. And I am super psyched to watch TJ Warren down the stretch because, one, this is the first thing I have on here. We get to see him against Jimmy Butler twice. And Jimmy Butler finally had comments about TJ Warren, by the way. I can't believe we didn't bring those up on the show. And I can't believe I didn't remember to bring those up before I started talking today. Some terrible, terrible prep for me today. Anyway, Jimmy Butler said on TJ Warren, "It's a basketball game to me. I'm pretty sure you can't see that, the smile that's on my face. They're a very good team, but I'm taking the Miami Heat twice." So he kind of deferred talking about Warren specifically, but he did say that he thinks they're going to beat the Pacers twice, which will only fuel TJ Warren's fire. I'm excited to watch him against Jimmy two times and possibly more should those teams line up in the postseason. But speaking of the postseason, that's one thing I'm going to watch with TJ Warren. This is his first playoffs, right? With the Suns, you know, first of all, he only played 66 games in a season in his most appearance season. If he plays in all eight of these games, he will set his record for appearances in a shortened season. But really, you know, the Suns didn't have to try down the stretch. And some of that's why he didn't play. But some of that is also like he would play less minutes or they would lean in on youth and stuff like that. This time, two things. One, they'll get to be playing in games that matter down the stretch. How much does that fuel him? How much does that continue to push his obscene levels of scoring, right? 57% on twos is unbelievable and a career high for him. Still draining threes at a solid rate. I mean, he's just been awesome on offense. It's ridiculous. Can he maintain that when the games, A, are extra important in the regular season, and B, when they really matter in the postseason, right? He's never gotten an NBA playoff appearance. He's never gotten close. The Suns were terrible every year he was there. How does he look in a postseason setting? Now, if you had told me before the season I'd be talking about TJ Warren in a postseason setting, I would say, yeah, he has to hit threes to stay in the game because he's just an offensive player. But as you all know from watching him a million times this year, TJ Warren is a good defensive player now, which is not something I ever thought I would say, and it's only his first season with the team. But again, I bring this up all the time as my examples when talking to other people. They had that road trip where they played Dallas and Portland and Golden State pre-trading D'Angelo Russell. And he matched up with Dame. And then two nights later, he matches up with D'Lo. And then the Mavs were a long time later. But then he's matching up with Luka. And, you know, they keep putting him on the other team's best guy. Some of that was because Brogdon was out, but he did an okay job. And I think that I think watching his defensive assignments is going to be something I'm monitoring with him, first of all, because, you know, with Brogdon coming off COVID, if he is even a little winded, they probably will try to hide him a little more on defense and just stick Warren on that guy. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. That's one reason I'm watching his defensive assignments, but also because I want to see him do a good job on these guys. If he can show, I mean, even if it's just scrimmages, but, you know, he gets Dame again and he gets Luka again and he gets DeRozan. And then, you know, in the regular season, maybe they throw him on, you know, a Tobias Harris or even a Ben Simmons or who knows, Jimmy Butler. Obviously, like, how does he do against those guys? If he does a good job in the postseason, he might get a tough defensive assignment. And that's going to be hard for him to guard a really good player and maintain his ridiculous level of offense in the playoffs. But, I mean, that's what makes him so good is that he's been able to do that this year. So there's a lot to watch for with him. But I think that, you know, seeing who he matches up with and how good his D is going to be first, because part of the reason the Pacers have been better than I expected and most national people expected is because they've had more wing defense because, I mean, McDermott's not good, but he's passable, and Warren has been good. They finally got something out of him. So the importance of that has just been it takes pressure off other guys. It gets the team two or three more stops a game they wouldn't have had, you know, in everybody's head. That's a lot of points that adds up quick, and his offense has maintained while that has happened. He's just drastically improved his impact. So if he can, again, if he can keep that going in the playoffs, I think that's going to be huge. But really, I mean, for him, it's just if his shooting percentages stay the same or at least close to what they were in the regular season, right, that makes him awesome on offense because that his shooting percentages are so good and he isn't assisted that much, right? A lot of his buckets are, I mean, like through a pick and roll or something, but he is scoring off the bounce or creating space himself. He doesn't need to be flying around a million screens or anything like that. That's so valuable. It's so useful when you know you can throw him in any lineup and he'll be the guy who can get you a bucket and he can play good defense. So I think just for him, and I said this with a lot of guys, which is stupid, but I mean there's some guys who need to improve. It's going to be imperative for them to be better than they were at points in the regular season to keep this team rolling. Looking at Brogdon and Depot a lot there and a little bit of Turner. But really, if Warren can get better, that's ridiculous. If everybody could get better, that's ridiculous. But a lot of the forwards, if they just maintain the level they were at in the regular season, they'll still keep a solid rotation spot and make the Pacers good. And if they can be better, that's just icing on the cake. And I think Warren in the playoffs can. I mean, that dude just loves basketball more than a lot of guys. So I'm really looking forward to watching him. I'm really looking forward to watching all these guys. But I really am looking forward to watching TJ Warren in meaningful games. Should be awesome. So, yeah, that's the forwards. I'm sure I missed something huge that I should be looking out for. But that's the forwards. Guards will come Monday, so the remaining guys are Depot, Aaron Holiday, McConnell, Brogdon, Sumner, and Nazmi Trulong. Maybe I'll throw in a line about watching Lamb's fanny packs or something. I don't know, but he is there, so maybe I'll talk about him. But yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in today. Hope you had a great week, and I will see you on Monday.